More ink has been spilled on describing dragons than nearly any other creature in the Dungeons & Dragons. These ancient, noble, yet savage beasts are favorite subjects of bards' tales, tomes, scrolls, and guidebooks. Today, we delve into what Fizbin has to say on the subject. Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your guest. Hello, operator.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
Aspect of Tiamat.
You're not an aspect of Tiamat.
I am your co-host, Brandon.
And we hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring to your next adventure.
Yeah. Ooh, that's really good.
Thanks, I tried.
I am super excited for today's episode. As you can tell, we've got a wonderful guest with us. I am a super fan, so I'm trying hard not to geek out. So hello, operator. Would you like to take a moment to tell everyone kind of what you do in the world of D&D?
Yeah, sure. Hi. So I'm a TikToketeer at hello operator. The O in the operator is actually a zero because somebody was more quick with that one than I was. I also stream on Twitch, two different channels. Twitch.tv/TheTraumaClub is the one where I DM, and there's Twitch.tv/CreativeCrits. And I'm a huge, huge Pathfinder buff. I started out talking solely and specifically about Pathfinder, and I've realized over time, like many things, that maybe my true love, it is not the true love of the masses, so I've branched back out with fifth edition.
Well, that depends on which win, I should say.
Oh, that's funny. So I want to thank you for joining us today. I invited you because I absolutely fell in love with the string series that you made on TikTok on comparing, hey, here's what the D&D Dragon does, but look what Pathfinder did better. So I really, really enjoyed that. So I thought that you would be a perfect guest to have on as we cover the Fizbin's Treasury of Dragons. And since you're our guest, would you like to give us some brief information or your brief insight into what you think? What is the Fizbin's book? I know you've gotten your hands on it a little bit. I don't know how much you've delved into reading it. He's like, yeah, I got it.
Yeah, I got it. Like one of my fans actually sent it to me. It's like, I was tickled to death when I got it.
That's awesome.
I love the book. I absolutely love it. I think it's probably one of the most concise and focused supplementals that Wizards has put out, because it picks one topic and then just explores every single aspect about it. Creation lore, feats that have something to do with dragons, the classes. One of the subclasses makes Ranger viable at the table. And what I really love, and you mentioned the Pathfinder dragons, so creature ratings in Pathfinder go a lot higher than 20. There are things that you are not supposed to fight in Pathfinder.
Yep.
You can, but you better bring a lot of friends. And this is the first book that I've dabbled with, official release, that there's CR level 30 stuff in here, which by the math should take a party of four 30 level or 30th level adventurers,
which doesn't exist.
I know, which makes me hope for like mythic levels, and I squealed a little on the inside when I saw that.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that. We've talked about on the show quite a few times about how it's nice to have monsters that and enemies that the players just can't outright destroy. At least not without some like premeditation of weakening them, like Superman and Kryptonite or something. So to see those high level dragons that are much more viable than a stupid Tarrasque that has no ranged weapon.
Yeah.
the one that shall not be mentioned. So I think they really did a good job delving into that. And I really, if you don't know, in this book, you know, everyone knows the chromatic and the metallic dragons, right? But they brought gem dragons into this, which is something that has already been around in the past. I know you touched on a little bit in, on your Pathfinder, series about the differences between them, but there was a few in this book that really just tickled my dice when I saw them, because I don't know if you've ever, you mentioned you didn't have a lot in the official books, but there is the, is it the, what is the mythos?
Oh, a mythic Asathi of Theros?
Yes, that one. That one had a unique feature that hadn't been published in any other one called Mythic Actions, which basically, for high-level monsters, such as the level 30 dragons you're talking about, when they basically, you think you've beaten them, it changes the game, it basically resets the situation and gives them new powers. So I'm really excited to see that brought in this book. And that, honestly, that was one of my favorite takeaways from this book as a dungeon master, is the mythic is officially tied, powers are now tied into it. So I know I had to get that out because I was giddy about it when I was reading. I was like, that's the first thing I want to talk about.
I want to say, like, the Great Worm Dragon Turtle has that.
Oh, yes, yes.
Like, you drop him down to zero HP and he just comes fully back and controls like a typhoon around it or something terrible.
A big F you to the players. Oh, yeah, we got him. Why is he still moving?
Why is he bigger?
Why is there all that in choir suddenly?
Why did the music change? Damn it. All right, so obviously there's a lot that we could talk about with the Dragon's Lore. You actually mentioned how in-depth it goes. Obviously, our show is only an hour long, and we got a half hour from the main topic. Was there anything particular in the lore that really tickled your dice?
I loved ancient worms. Yeah. So, or great worms, rather. Mm-hmm. So we've always had, like, wormlings and, like, dragons and ancient dragons and blah, 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 blah. But one thing that I loved in Pathfinder, and they finally have here, are the great worms. Great worms are named dragons, and they're the biggest of the biggest bad boys. And the pictures of some of them, the picture of the great red worm, he's breathing fire down, and you look at, oh, that's a pretty cool picture. And then you realize what he's breathing fire down onto is an entire city.
And you're like, oh.
Yes.
Yes.
Which makes it disappointing that the biggest size in 5th edition, at least, is gargantuan. It's gargantuan. It's like, yeah, it's almost like that, and artwork like that, that reminds me, there used to be bigger sizes in past editions.
Like ancient, right?
No, sizes. Like, bigger than gargantuan.
Oh, okay.
Colossal was bigger, wasn't it?
One of them, right?
Yeah.
Yes, so that's really cool. The thing that I really like that they did with these is they added a lot of ways to play dragons, and that's something I want to touch on in the later half, and so think about that as we move forward about how it did a really good job with that. The thing that I think tickles most people is the new player options. You mentioned it right out the gate, the new ranger. I would just like to say, and I've said it before, I know Wizards of the Coast is watching our show. Do you know how I know?
Because they mail you.
Because the way they scaled the new Drake Warden is exactly how my School of Binding Wizard works, that came out long before their playtest material. I'm just saying. So, now that I've got that rant out of there, the Drake Warden and the Ascendant Dragon. Do you want to tell us a little bit about what you really like about the Drake Warden?
So, first off, it has the most adorable art I've seen in any book. He's got his little Drake puppy. I love it. So I love the fact that it's Beastmaster, but fixed.
Yes.
The creature that you're taking with you actually matters. It does something. And
that's what Beastmaster
is
supposed to do.
It was also a class I was a little disappointed with. I feel as if we could have had other, like, families of pets and given them special abilities.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'm 100% okay with this. Any love the ranger gets at this point is good love.
Yes, and I really like what they did, because they basically gave you a special stat block and said, okay, here's the basics of the character. These choices you make will alter it in this way to fit your theme, but pretty much this is the stat block instead of going and opening up 20 different stat blocks in the back of the book to pick one. I think that is the right way to do it.
I just had a brief flashback. Actually, of a druid I ran in 3.5, one of the prestiges I took, if you will, is what the Beastmaster's meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
Not how I said meant to be.
Meant to be.
And I remember what the Hellier's meant, where my dragon, the wolf I had ended up being poisoned, crippling so, and we just leveled up, and I turned to the DM, So by that dire wolf, I can get at this level.
I like that. So the thing that I really liked about the Drake Warden is, first of all, people have been saying, make it a bonus action attack. That's exactly what they did. Yep. The fact that so many features of it are tied to your proficiency bonus,
yep,
which is really cool.
Which is something they've been moving to since Tasha's, really.
Yes. And then, and that's something I've been experimenting with all the stuff I've been creating, because I think that that's a better tool for something that's not tied to your core ability score. So you don't have to have that as a high score to get the full benefit. What I liked about it is that the Drake slowly evolves as you level up. And that is certainly something that the Beastmaster was missing. Because you, as it evolves, it physically changes and gets new abilities based on those changes.
Yep.
Which is just, that is perfect. It gets its breath, it gets its flight by the end of it, and that's that. They really handled it really, really well.
I don't know how many people were playing Beastmaster Ranger before, but I know none will be now.
You're probably right.
So
it's like, I can get a wolf, or I can get a dragon.
It's really not even here? A contest, right? But I hope that that means, I don't know if anybody knows, but they're redoing all the core books.
Yeah.
I suspect things like this and all the stuff in Tasha's is going to kind of be reflected in all those changes.
Or rolled in.
Let's all cross our fingers, right? Yeah.
And so how different will Ranger be when that comes out?
Right. So the next thing we want to talk about is the other subclass, which is the Monk. I love the idea of being able to alter your attacks into the element of your choice.
Yes.
You got to do that with the sword gun mage that we did, right?
Yeah. Right.
Where you got to alter the cantrip's power to fit whatever. Well, it was random, I think, for that one, isn't it?
It's random, yeah.
Which is a sorcerer, not a wizard.
Yes. Whatever. I know what it is. I built it. I'm just on a different track right now. So what are your thoughts on the Way of the Ascendant Dragon? What did they do right? What did they do wrong?
I love it. I was a little miffed at when I first started reading it, because I thought Step of the Wind was something completely different. I had Step of the Winds and Misty Step confused
mixed
in
up.
My head.
Yeah.
Oh, you can grow wings and fly instead of teleport? That's just the same thing with more effort. But then I realized that Step of the Wind is just you can disengage or dodge as a bonus action. I enjoy it. I really, really like it. I think being able to switch what element you're doing at any time is a little powerful. But see, I think the Monk also needs to be, like Ranger, it was another one that needed some extra love.
Yeah, and I see where you're going with the element being a little strong, but I feel like resistances don't come into play nearly as often.
Yep,
and so I don't feel like it. Now, if you're the type of DM that runs where resistance becomes a big deal, where you're constantly throwing monsters with resistance, there's not a whole, I mean, poison and fire are basically the two.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
That, I mean, okay, you're going to be able to overcome those, whatever.
Yeah, but it's like there's more poison and fire elemental spells than anything else. Yeah. That's also the two most resisted
ones. So,
yeah, it's not like it's giving you psychic damage punches or force damage. Nothing's resistance, dude.
Yeah. F you, barbarians.
But the, but the Dragon Disciple, of course, you can, like, you learn Draconic, as we said, you can choose the element of your punches. That's awesome. I can now make that fire sorcerer used to be able to make in past editions.
I think it's really cool that it touches on being able to use the breath of the dragon, but it doesn't take an action. You can do it as part of one of your attacks. And that to me is huge, because now if you're a dragonborn, Way of the Ascended Monk Dragon, you can fire breath more than once in a single turn. And that's awesome.
Actually, that might be a good segue into you speaking about the Dragonborn features that they did.
Perfectly, yeah. Do you get a chance to delve into the Dragonborn race options at all?
I did. The Dragonborn themselves, no. I was looking at the feats.
Well,
although, I do like that they added the Gym Dragonborn.
Okay. And just to reiterate, obviously the Dragonborn are an option from the player's handbook. And basically, the two things you gained was you gained resistance to the element of your choice, and you had a breath weapon, which you could only use once per short or long rest. That's been overhauled.
Yes, and now you can do it based on your proficiency bonus on quantity, and it isn't an action, it's a part of the attack action. So now if you're a fighter and you get, you know, several attacks, you can now swing your sword, breath weapon, swing your sword, breath weapon.
Or,
which is great.
Or we have three attacks, and your proficiency scores at least three, breath weapon, breath weapon, breath weapon.
As long as you got a high enough proficiency, yeah. The thing that I like about it most, because the first thing that came into my mind is my big warrior boot kicking somebody right to the ground, stand over, insulting them, and then opening their mouth and just a burst of energy coming out, be like, suck it.
And it's also worth mentioning, too, that they actually split up the chromatic dragonborn, the gem dragonborn, and the metallic ones. They have different features the others don't have.
Such as? Mm-hmm. I know resistance is one of them.
Yes, they all get resistance to your element. But mm-hmm. the chromatic dragon, for example, get chromatic warding. At fifth level, they can, for 1 minute, become immune to the damage type that they have.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah.
The other thing is the dice changed. If I'm not mistaken, it's a d10 now, right?
Yep.
It's
still based off your con modifier, but it still ramps up a little bit better.
But while early on the damage average is slightly less, it quickly becomes more potent from 2d6 to 1d10. So I think that was a really good change. I like that you get the different types of blasts too, like repulsion, which allows you to knock people back and stuff. No longer is that the domain of the Eldritch Blast, Repelling Blast, Warlock. So, The other thing that I wanted to talk about is, and it's not as fleshed out, we were actually discussing before the show, is they actually give details how to become a half dragon, which I think is sexy as hell, and really had my dice trembling with excitement till I realized there was no mechanical benefits to it at all. I'm like, oh, that's sad.
And it was a straight up player race in past editions too. So.
I don't know. Did you have any thoughts on that, operator?
Not particularly, other than just the ways that you have to go across becoming one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I could see you'd become a target real quick.
Yeah.
Or if you get a little hungry after one, you know, gets his ass kicked, maybe slurp down some of that blood too.
Which is touched on multiple times in this book, actually, in different sections.
Oh yeah, that's a creature.
Yep. So, did you have this is actually your first time looking through this book. What do you think?
There's so much information to go through.
I know.
Seeing the addition of the gem dragons and the dragonborn background or ancestry, I'm looking at the artwork and I'm just getting excited about it.
Oh, the artwork is gorgeous, especially the one with them in the tavern. Just a bunch of monstrous creatures sitting in a tavern having a drink.
I'm looking at.
I know.
That and the gem ancestry, the damage types that they added.
Mm-hmm.
That's so cool. It's the force, radiant, psychic, thunder, and necrotic.
Yeah, like. And I do think it's worth mentioning the gem dragonborn, they're telepathic, which is a feature they get.
That's a huge one.
Yeah, up to 30 feet.
And their level 5 ability is 1 minute flight.
Oh, that's hot.
There's so many options to fly now.
Yeah. I also wanted to have it worth pointing out that if you choose Emerald Dragonborn, you resist psychic damage.
Mm-hmm.
Think if you take a bear totem barbarian.
You're damn near invulnerable. Now the only thing they're left can weaken is force, right? Or did they already have resistance to force?
They already had resistance to force.
Bastards.
It says you manifest spectral wings. Is that considered a magical?
I would assume that if you flew into an anti-magic zone that would discharge it, probably.
No.
It's a feature. It's not a spell, so it wouldn't work.
Yeah. It depends on how badly I want them to walk across the traps.
You're not flying over my traps, bastards! Garwin says, Dragonborn are actually viable now.
Yep.
Before, they didn't really reflect their flavor at all. Now they're viable in all parts, and I agree with that very much.
And it's also worth mentioning, too, that the level 5 ability that the Metallic Dragonborn get is they gain more breath weapon options.
Mm-hmm.
What?
That's where repulsion comes in, I think, right?
That's one. Where yes, they can push enemies back, but the other one is...
Innervating?
Yes, which can incapacitate the enemy instead.
That's savage.
Until the start of your next turn.
Alright, we've talked a lot about the class options. There's so much stuff in this book. Can I just say how amazing the artwork is? I love Dyson's logos, maps too. Those are really fleshed out. The other thing that I thought was really, really cool is how detailed their lairs are. You literally can just pick up the map and the details and, all right, time to go visit the dragon, and you've got everything included in it. And I think this is a good segue into, you know, playing a dragon, because I hear and I've seen, now this is just Justin's experience, this is not reflecting of all tables, is I've seen dragons often played in ran poorly, more like beasts than intelligent creatures, specifically when it comes to flight. I often see, you know, people fighting dragons like on the ground. No sane dragon would do that. And so they give us like a third of the book talks about different ways to run the dragon as a monster, to run it as a schemer, and run it as a power source. So, hello, operator. As the expert dragon master here, can you tell us what when it comes to dragons in play, how do you run a dragon as a monster and get the most out of it?
So it depends on how deep you want to go with it. I get very, very deep with mine. Every single dragon has a different mindset, a different personality, different mental thinkings. White dragons canonically are they have photogenic memories. Every single coin in their hoard, they remember exactly where they got it from, and they're all just this deep, rich lore behind them. It depends on which ones I'm running. They should definitely be intelligent, especially if you're dealing with an adult or older dragon. They don't go out for a reason. They don't have to. People worship these things. They write stories about them. And some of them will outlive the histories written about them. These are not just your average everyday beast.
You just touched on something that I think is amazing. And the fact that they outlive written history is something that makes them absolutely amazing and NPCs to run, because they don't, if they go to sleep and hibernate for 1,000 years and then you ask one for directions, it's probably not, the place isn't going to probably be in the same place it was when it took a nap, or it doesn't bother leaving its area enough to keep track of, you know, the new cities that have been and kingdoms that have risen. Just wake up one day and they fly out and like, the hell did these people come from? You're in my land, you know?
Just 3 creeks over from the Thrycreen kingdom.
The who? Right. But that's exactly it.
I'm still stuck on the white dragon. He's just waltzing by his horde. Just wait a minute. It's
back. Yeah, that's. I think that's a lore tidbit from second edition.
Yep.
But yeah, like every single piece, they know exactly where it came from.
That's fascinating.
Yep.
There's a YouTube channel that they actually follow pretty specifically. That goes into. They do a series called. What they don't tell you about blah.
Oh, Mr. Rex?
And yes, Mr. Rex.
He's good.
Yeah. He's got one for every single color of dragon. I love his one about kobolds. But yeah, that's where I get a lot of my lore for my dragons.
And that's fair, because he makes great videos. And that's also worth mentioning too, like the monsters, since we're kind of talking about them, there's about, give or take, 70 stat blocks in here for dragon creatures and dragon adjacent or related creatures. Two of them might be aspects of Bahamut or aspect of Tiamat.
Yes.
Which are challenge rating 30.
That's what I'm talking about. The thing that makes them, and it goes on to this, is dragons as like monsters and schemers.
Yep.
And part of what makes them such great schemers and is the fact that they've been around for a really, really long time. And they know what every creature in the area is capable of. And they have enough followers to send people to do a lot of their dirty work, or good work, I guess, depending on, you know, where they fall in the alignment stuff. But to me, they can be just as skeevy as like a beholder, as far as the complex politicking that they do, because some of them love the politicking game, and that's something I don't think. Once again, I haven't seen a lot of. DMs really engage in that aspect of what a dragon does. If you have all the wealth in the world and you want to keep growing that, but that's not going to keep you as entertained as watching and manipulating all the ants that are around you. Have you had a good experience with a scheming dragon?
I have. I've played with it was an older edition dragon. It's called a dungeon dragon. And they're
a little on point.
Their whole purpose in life, so they don't measure their self-worth by the size of their hoard. They measure their self-worth in how many adventurers die trying to get through their lair.
Challenge accepted.
They'll use their human form to actually follow other adventurers around and take notes on dungeons they go through.
That is an amazing character concept.
So I've run one as an NPC who was very unhelpful guiding the NPCs through like traps and stuff. And just sitting there,
That is genius. I love it.
Or to become an adventurer so they can encounter traps so they can take down the notes for how to build said traps.
Yeah, 100%.
Oh, they got by it this way. I need to put a counter thing for that. Oh, he just did it with the spell. That's going to need a glyph of warding with counter spell on it. Yeah. You know.
But if you think about it too, with dragons, like you said, they can live longer than civilizations. It would be nothing for a dragon to take on a human form, establish himself as this wizened being that shows up every 100 years, shapes policy in a kingdom, and then just goes and takes another 100-year nap and pops back up and slowly over time molds a civilization to worship them.
Oh, see, that's what I'm talking about. That's the way you run a dragon. Yep. And there, it talks about dragon as powers, and that's something that is given to us in a new feature that is my favorite in the 5th edition called regional effects.
Yes.
And once again, this is something that I think every DM needs to include, even if you're not going to have the dragon as part of the adventure. Rumblings and trembling starting because an earth dragon or whatever gold dragon, whatever the earth dragon is nearby, so there's constant tremors, right? Or one of the adventures I did for our Kickstarter that just got funded, thank you to everyone, in the den of the skull dragon, the whole town has been poisoned and nobody can figure out why. And then as you go through the adventure, you find out, oh, a black dragon has made its home in the fetid pools far to the north, and the stuff is just seeping down into the town. And that's not him actively trying to cause a problem. It's just the nature of him being an acid dragon. And that's the sort of stuff that we really need to focus on when developing our worlds, even if we're not going to have a battle with the dragon.
Yeah. And actually, I do kind of like the regional effects they give for each type of dragon. Like,
yes.
Looking at the crystal dragon, for example, one regional effect is clear skies. It doesn't rain here ever for some reason.
No crops.
And there's also a lot of quartz crystals all over the place, within 6 miles of its lair, which segues into icy sight. A crystal dragon can actually basically see through ice or quartz within 6 miles of their lair, so they can see you coming a mile away.
Everywhere, that's awesome.
One of the concepts I try to bring in whenever I'm home, or especially a homebrew campaign, is there's a lot going on in this world, and not all of it is at your level.
Yes.
And those type of regional effects play into that so well.
Oh, absolutely. And that's something that, once again, I'm sure I've had it as a DM tip at some point on the show, that regional effects are the absolute epitome of how big the world is. Because those are just side effects of something so powerful. It's a side effect. Mm-hmm. They're not actively like, all right, crystal's there. No, they're just, they appear because they're there. And that's something that, if you're going to include, you should include dragons in your game, even if it isn't something your adventurers are meant to deal with. And I just think that there's a lot to go into. This book covers a lot of stuff. Obviously, in an hour show, we can't cover everything. I would like to take a moment to ask our buddy, Hello Operator, what is your favorite dragon? And can you tell us a little bit about it?
Oh man, I really, really, really enjoy the classics. If we're just sticking to dragons that are presented now in 5th edition,
that's a fair comment.
I'd have to go with the red dragon. I love them. They're conniving. They're probably the most accessible of the dragons that you would fight as a 5th edition party, because they are the more vicious. They're dumber. But they're also far more aggressive. A lot of the other dragons are a little bit more territorial. A red dragon will actively go out and attack other dragons when their realm starts touching. They need to be dominant. And because of that, you see dragons like Smaug in Lord of the Rings. Like, there is a reason he's a, like, red dragons were based on him.
Yep.
Awesome. GTFO!
And also, we can't cover everything, but it is worth noting the book also includes some spell options, some items, including a bow.
Yes. Oh my god. Dude, one of the monk items! There's an item just for monks!
That boosts their, their saves for their, any key-related abilities, which is nice.
Yeah, I love it. There needs to be more class-specific items.
Yep, and it is worth noting that they did add a lot of dragons and dragon-adjacent creatures. There were some entries I was hoping were going to be in here, like steel dragons, iron dragons, titanium dragons, dream dragons.
Oh, I love steel dragons.
Earthquake dragons.
Oh, is that not a thing?
In Pathfinder, and I'm hoping they'll go this way. I love the point, because as soon as he said it, primal dragons, dragons of the void, dragons of the different planes, there are dream dragons and nightmare dragons and Shadowfell dragons. This is a tease.
Yes.
I think his dice are trembling.
But I gotta say, while you guys were talking, I was looking through his book, I'm looking at all the artwork, oh man, this is so pretty, and I see a red dragon, I go, Chris Ron painted that.
You could tell who it was?
Chris Ron has a specific art style. Uh-huh. He does magic cards. Yeah, I met him once and he signed a few of my cards.
Nice.
He's going through
you
there.
Can
I was
take
like,
it out?
I'm pretty sure that's Ron's art.
Can we just, before I know we're running behind on time, but I just want to say, can we appreciate the Elder Brain Dragon thing?
Yes.
That monstrosity.
Slime puppy.
Like, oh my god, like, I saw that, and it's terrifying, and every game needs one.
Yeah, because, like, their breath weapon can infect you with Mind Flayer tadpoles.
What's that?
It's breath weapon, what he was saying.
Yeah,
it's a 15-foot wide line of, you're now infested with Mind Flayer tadpoles.
Which
can turn you into a Mind Flayer.
See, this is an example of where you can have a dragon become a critical part, even at low levels. Because maybe it happened, it breathed over a town that pissed it off, and now they're all infected, so you got some low-level adventurers that have to figure out how to heal them. Which I think is kind of the premise of the new Baldur's Gate 3 game. Like, you get infected right from the beginning, but something
it,
like...
It is.
Oh my gosh, it's just... or maybe you're higher level, and now you gotta go hunt him down and kill him. I don't know if that would stop... It wouldn't stop the tadpole thing, though, I don't think.
I will say, if you fail that low-level quest, it's gonna become a high-level quest real quick.
And thus, the city of the Mind Flayers was born.
Yeah.
My mom lived there, dude. So anyways...
Not anymore.
Now, I don't know a whole lot about Mind Flayer backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
When you get transformed into one, are you still you?
No.
Is your body captive by the tadpole?
You're a meat cocoon.
You're a meat cocoon.
Okay.
Pretty short version?
Yeah.
That's my new favorite one, a meat cocoon.
So it's a more jacked up version of a xenomorph.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
So okay. It's,
and
it's
the same way, like, xenomorphs have, like, three different
cycles
of their species.
Yeah.
They have the same thing.
Yeah, and that to me is just terrifying as the player, because what if that infected you in this process, which once again, coincidentally, is the premise of the new game, where you're going to turn into this thing, you're not going to be yourself, you're going to be dead. What can I do to stop it?
And it's worth mentioning, too, that these tadpoles from this breath weapon, if you're infected by it, the only way to get rid of them is to be restored at least 40 hit points, or a spell that ends curses.
Oh, that sucks. That's rough. Anyways, it's terrifying, and I love it. And when I first saw
it's
that
horrible.
Thing, I was just like, this needs to be an adventure now.
That thing's all
stay
over
tuned.
TikTok.
Yeah.
Look at the slime puppy.
All right, so,
stupid snoot.
Before we
I understood that reference.
Before we move on to our owner tips and tricks, is
I
there any
TTS.
Other thing that we wanted to jump on? Operator, Brandon?
If we were not pressed for time, I would also talk about the feats. I love the feats, and I'm stealing one for my artificer.
And I will briefly mention, they did say if you kill a dragon or bathe in its blood or so on and so forth, you can gain draconic gifts, which they did say you can use as feats, FYI.
I thought the draconic gifts was a nice touch. That follows more along the lines
and
for me, the boons and stuff, because there needs to be more boons and buffs as opposed to just magic item loot. So why don't you tell me about your feat? The one you're talking about.
Oh, yeah. So, when Artificer first came out, in UA, there was a spell. It was a concentration spell, and as a bonus action, you could change the element of, you know, whatever magical weapon you were attuned to.
Mm-hmm.
And that UA spell did not make it into actual published content. However, I believe it's the chromatic dragon. I don't want to lie to anybody.
I'm told Wizards doesn't put page references because they're paid. They make mistakes and have to fix them, and the pages are always wrong. So it's okay if you get it wrong.
Gift of the Chromatic Dragon. As a bonus action, you touch a simpler martial weapon and infuse it with one of the following damage types: acid, cold, fire, lightning, or poison. For the next minute, the weapon deals an extra 1d4 of the chosen type when it hits. After you use this bonus action, you can't do so until you finish a long rest. So, I mean, you're not able to burn a spell slot and do it whenever you want to.
But that's still pretty nice.
I really like the idea of my repeating crossbow now firing flaming bolts.
That's fantastic. And I feel like that could easily off... is that specific artificer ability? Or just a spell anybody could pick up?
No, it's just a feat.
I wonder if... so it's a feat. So even like the ranger could take it. That's dope. Yeah. I love that. I love it. All right. I think that'll do it for our main topic today. I love this book. I think it's great. I would like to see more books like this around specific groups of monsters. I was telling Ian before we started, I would love to write one that's just about goblins, just about kobolds, just about orcs, which I think would be really, really...
The meat of the low levels.
Golems.
Well, no, you can have high level ones too.
Just the Underdark.
Oh, there was a fourth edition book that was about the Underdark. That was just the Underdark.
Of course,
and I loved it. It was great. So I might even. I mean, I got a million ideas for projects I want to do, and that's just one more added on to it. But I think it does it really well. I love that it's focused on a creature that I don't see get used enough. Even I'm guilty of that, though. I use other things along the lines like a sphinx, ginormous sphinx, but.
Start your adventure today.
Experience tabletop RPGs run by professional game masters.
Startplaying.games is the largest online platform for players to find tabletop role-playing and professional GMs for any game system and any virtual tabletop.
Are you looking to play D&D online or find a virtual Pathfinder 2E group?
Start Playing is part Tabletop Group Finder and part Games Finder. Their professional game masters are running games all over the world.
We've both had some fantastic experiences with the user-friendly and intuitive platform.
In addition, the community and support are grade A.
If you're a greenhorn or a veteran, role player or a power gamer, you can easily find a game that works for you and your schedule.
Visit startplaying.games today and join some new friends in your favorite tabletop RPG game, or even give a new one a try.
We have to do a shameless plug first. Fantastic Feats of Forgotten Realms, now available on DM's Guild. One of the best parts of Dungeons & Dragons is creating your character. And when it comes to this, as Hello Operator has just so excellently showed us, you can never have enough options. In this book, you will find 55 new feats for your 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons games. Whether you're looking to enhance your role-playing skill, your role-playing your skills, or your combat abilities, you will certainly find something to fit your character and playstyle here.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Our character concept comes from our wonderful guest, Hello Operator. So why don't you tell us about your wonderful character concept for the audience today?
Why, thank you.
You're welcome.
So if anybody does follow me on the Tiki Talks, recently I accidentally started a war between the goblins and the kobolds. And then I discovered that kobold society is almost communism. Canonically, they would be the wealthiest race in all the world.
Really?
If they didn't give all of their wealth to their dragon. So I started thinking about this, and somebody tagged me in the Uwu Communist Manifesto, because that's a thing we don't have to talk about here. Oh, God. And I got thinking about, like, you could make this entire campaign session about these kobolds who form together and rise against the dragon bourgeoisie. Ooh. Except it doesn't work out well, and that's where this character concept comes from. Tried to do that, and he is the sole survivor.
Oh, I love it.
So Clack is his name, or their name, because kobolds canonically have no concept of gender whatsoever. They can swap back and forth biological sexes.
Wait, that makes
sense? That's cool. I didn't know that.
I had to go with the Way of the Ascendant Dragon Monk for his class. And yeah, his entire thing is traveling the world, gaining experience, getting more in tune with that draconic trait that kobolds actually have. Unlike Dragonborn, kobolds actually share an origin story with the creation of dragons.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Of one day returning home and taking back his ancestral lands.
God, that's hot.
All right, since we're touching on kobolds, I have to ask. Furry or scaly?
Oh, no. No. Pinky? I don't know. What are humans?
Just in the furry community.
No.
I think it's a type.
No, because some kobolds in the past
normie,
have been...
that's what I am. I'm a normie.
No, I'm just referring more to the fact that kobolds in the past have been depicted as, like, reptilian or scale-like, but they also have been
I know exactly what you mean.
So. Yeah, I didn't know that.
So the scaled kobold,
yeah.
What we know as the scaled kobolds, I think is only, like, 10 or 15 years old.
Really?
I thought they were always scaly.
Kobold is actually the German word for goblin.
How did I not know that?
Kid you not.
And if you really want to get confused, read that Norse mythology.
That makes even more sense, because it sounds German.
Like, kobolds are normally like, I think they're like supposed to be like dog faced or this, that, the other, but no, I love the scaly versions of them.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When you say dog version, I'm just like, that sounds weird. I don't know that I like that. I want to unhear that.
I don't want to be walking through the ones and be like, oh, he's a good boy, and they get my throat slit.
Isn't that what would happen with a gnoll? Oh, who's a good boy?
Well, like the dog version always saw in like Record of Lodos Wars, for example.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that. Thank you for letting me borrow that anyway.
Yeah.
Honestly, dude, I absolutely love this character concept.
Yep.
And I think it would make for an amazing player campaign where all the players are kobolds and are leading this rise up against the dragon that's just treating them like garbage, and they're the only ones like, why are we taking this shit?
Yeah.
You know?
And then Bob disappears in a 60-foot cone of flame. Oh, yeah.
That's why.
I would take that one step further and have every character be a path of the Ascendant Dragon Monk, but they can't change their damage type.
Which actually surprised me wasn't that way to begin with.
And they follow an aspect of Bahamut, who just happens to be named Zordon for no reason.
I love it.
I see where you're coming with this.
Oh, that is great.
And just every once in a while, for no reason, I don't know where I'm coming up with this, you just hear the voice of Tiamat, make my monster grow! It's fast and large on things.
You can totally put her on the moon and then have the moon change colors to match her five dragon types. You know, it really surprised me.
Comrades.
Did they change it in this? I thought that they classified Tiamat as a monstrosity and not a dragon. Did they fix that?
Really?
Somebody, anybody confirm that? Because I could have swore that.
She lives in the like 7th or 8th level of the Abyss. She may have changed.
Yeah, I remember looking at it at one point. I don't know if it was something online, or I don't think it was in this book, but I know she's in this book. And
I will say, one of the things I like about this in the story of Tiamat, it makes her... I'm trying to find the word. She's not just evil. Like, there's a reason she mm-hmm. did the things that she did. A sympathetic villain. That's what I'm looking for.
That is the best kind of villain. Is the ones that you can understand and sympathize for. That's why I know
hashtag
everyone...
Thanos did nothing wrong.
You know, every time
he protected us from the Celestials, apparently.
Anyone brings up the name Tiamat, my very first thought was when the wife showed me the original D&D animation, the cartoon, mm-hmm. that was back in the 80s.
Yeah.
Have you seen any of that?
No.
No?
Tiamat, I know what
the first thing they fight?
The first thing they fight is Tiamat, and they're all like level 1 characters.
In the first episode, yes.
And they just run away. It's like, huh, they got away. That's
seems
extremely
unlikely.
Right.
Because it'd only be one episode long, or 3 seconds long. All right, I love the character concept of Clack, and obviously I had no idea of the no concept of gender, and I also didn't know that they were communists. That is something that is just awesome and fits so well.
Richard Fagan, a dragon that presses comrade.
now every single kobold is going to be Russian, my friend.
All of my kobolds shall now have Russian accent, comrade.
I got this thing. Let's do this.
Yeah, the aspect is a dragon, but the Tiamat stat block from earlier publications is a fiend, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I was like, yeah, I remember when I saw that. I thought she was a dragon. Mind. She's not. All right, I think that'll do it for our character concept. Our monster variant of the podcast is the Nexus Wyvern. So obviously, because I was reading through my Fizbin's book, I had to delve into something draconic dragon. It just kind of fit the theme. And because of that, I had to go with something that was arguably a dragon or not a dragon. Technically, a wyvern is not a dragon. Anybody that has seen dragons in Game of Thrones, those aren't dragons.
Okay, so every dragon in Skyrim is not a dragon.
Yes. So the Nexus Wyvern, to build this bad boy, we're going to start with a stat block of the Basilisk, but you're going to get rid of Petrifying Gaze because then it's not going to be our dragon. We're going to give it flight, 60 foot. We're going to give it a new aura called Nexus Aura. Each creature that starts its turn within 20 feet of the Wyvern must succeed a DC 12 strength saving throw or be pulled 10 feet towards it. Basically, it has a gravity aura that just sucks the players into it. Then we're going to give it Graviton Dome that recharges on a 5 or 6. The Wyvern exhales a 20-foot radius sphere of purple and blue haze that creates a powerful localized gravity centered on the Wyvern. It should be centered on the area. I think I changed that. The sphere spreads around corners and area is lightly obscured. The area lasts for 1d6 plus 2 rounds or until a wind of moderate speeds knocks it all away. Falling damage in the air is increased by 1d10 per 10 foot, or 1d6 I think is actually what falling damage is, isn't it? I always put d10, but I'm pretty sure it's d6. 1d6
for 10 feet.
So an extra d6 for every 10 feet. When a creature starts its turn in the area or enters for the first time, including when the Wyvern creates the aura, it must succeed a DC 12 saving throw. On a fail, the creature is restrained. On a success, the creature's speed is halved for the remaining, while the area remains. The restrained creature can repeat the saving throw at the ends of its turns. Then, of course, we're going to give it legendary actions. Because it's a low-level creature, none of these really do any damage, but man, are they fun. So first, it's going to have to be able to detect. Because it's in a obscured area, you don't want the little rogue bastards being able to hide super easy, so we're going to give it detect. We can make a wisdom perception check as a legendary action, and we're also going to give it imposing figure. The Wyvern spreads its wings and lets out a bellowing roar, and any creature within 30 feet must succeed a DC 12 wisdom saving throw or be frightened until the end of their next turn. And of course, we're going to give it tail, because what Wyvern isn't going to bitch slap anybody that tries to start some stuff? The Wyvern makes the shove action against a creature within 10 feet of it.
Back the fuck
up. Oh my goodness, I love this. I had a lot of fun designing this, and I would love to hear what Hello Operator's thoughts are on this.
That was long.
So first off, I love this. Oh, I love interesting mechanics. Mechanics are what make creatures worth fighting to me.
Yes.
It's not just it does extra damage or it has extra resistance. Right. I love that gravitation aura. And my mind immediately started going places like, well, if this thing was bigger, if it was older, if it was stronger, having things like trying to move away from it, the ground is treated as difficult terrain. If you were adjacent to it, you take 1D whatever force damage at the start of your turn.
Yes, I love it. So good. And this is the Basilisk, I think, is a CR3, right? Yeah. So I had to get creative with the extra abilities to not just be raw damage. And that's kind of what I try to always do, is what is something interesting I can come up with. And a gravity wyvern that is mistaken as a dragon just sounded fun.
Well, I love it. And what, especially as a wyvern? So one of the things I love doing when I start thinking about creatures, I start thinking about their ecology, their society, how they live. I would have these guys living on cliffs.
Oh, yeah.
And they don't actively go out and attack things. They just pull their prey off the cliff.
That was what I was thinking, too.
So have a dungeon or a lair where it just feels like they're going down a bridge that has those side rails. And just have them posted up on pedestals.
Well, and this thing just even just flies by, too. It just sucks things near it. So every time it goes to fly over them, they're pulled up and diagonal over the edge until they start falling. Like, oh my gosh. I hadn't really thought of that. I love it.
I'm thinking of the laziest version of birds, like picking up shellfish or crabs and dropping them on the rocks below. No, it's just flying by you. And
yep. It just drags it in its wake. What do you guys think?
Yeah. definitely a dangerous creature, and I don't think gravity's played with enough.
I agree. That's why I want to build a class around it.
Yep.
By the way, our Kickstarter did fund, and I have to build 4 new classes. And guess what flavor one of them is going to probably be? Gravity. Anyways,
see? My thoughts were the putting the graviton over the cliff and just letting the players fall.
Well, I thought it was also interesting that it's like a mist, too, that affects the area, not just a burst of energy.
Yep. I'm not thinking about that one random post where a guy was just driving on the road, and then a turtle suddenly fell out of nowhere onto his windshield because an eagle dropped it.
All right, so the last thing, I mentioned how much I love regional effects. So I had to give my Reaver a regional effect. So within a mile, random bursts of gravitational energy affect random objects and creatures per the levitate spell. In extreme rare conditions, it can even be reverse gravity, sending stuff falling in the wrong direction. Also, the pull of gravity thickens and doubles the weight of random creatures and objects, and the pull of gravity thins and decreases the weight of random objects by half. So the gravity all around this thing, this area, is just goofed.
Yep.
I love it.
Yeah, me too. So I think that'll do it.
Just like, we must be good.
Could you imagine how the players would feel if somebody just walked and just fell the wrong direction? They're like, what the hell happened to Johnny? that'll do it for our monster variant. If you like these sorts of things, please consider checking out our Patreon. Every week, I not only publish these in fancy stat blocks with beautiful art, I also write up all the lore that we've kind of discussed in my own thoughts, as well as lore you can feed your player characters with those fancy knowledge checks that I don't know why they took away from 4th edition. They should have brought that in, but I do. So consider checking out, or you can pick up what I've got here on the website for free and, you know, fill it out the rest yourself. All right. Brandon, would you like to tell us about our encounter of the podcast?
Our encounter for this podcast this day is the Winding Road Best Traveled.
Yeah.
Emerald Exchange, a powerful merchant's guild, seeks to expand its influence. Ulgar Fireforge, a thick and formal Durgar.
I have no idea.
Durgar.
Yes. Seeks adventurers to serve as the guild's emissaries. Ulfgar seeks the use of a road that runs through the dense Hollow Timbers forest. Unfortunately, it runs right through an adult green dragon's territory. As the guild's emissaries, the characters have to meet with the beast and reach an agreement that will allow any and all flying the guild's colors to pass safely.
Oh, shit. Ah.
At the very least...
Not everybody, just their guild.
It's a rival guild over here. They're trying to get through. Oh, fuck them.
They gotta pay the dragon themselves.
At the very least, not be attacked by the dragon and any of its followers. For the green dragon,
His name's not Mel.
Mio.
No, it's Mjol. I don't know what I was thinking when I came up with that. I'm pretty sure that was a randomly generated dragon name.
Mjolirilith.
Go with that.
I'm going to call Mio.
Okay, go with that.
Mio. To agree to the character's proposal, they must convince it that allowing regular passage through its territory will benefit it more than raiding the guild's caravans.
When I put this together, I just put in quotes, make dragon roar noise for the name. But I decided I probably should give it a real name.
Shout.
Because if people think our caravan can go through, they think their caravan can go through, which means there's one more cap for you to rob.
More loot? Oh, dude, that's actually a really good answer to this question, this argument.
A character with the sage or similar background that succeeds on a DC 21 intelligence, Sarkana, or history check, knows the following. Few dragons are as utterly reviled among humanoids as green dragons. Although green dragons might not be as powerful or as destructive as some of their kin, they are innately and instinctively deceptive.
Ooh.
They lie as easily as people speak, and they are good at it. They love intrigue and prefer to achieve their goals through guile and double dealing over any other means. Any brute can hunt, but it takes skill and intelligence to trick one's prey into offering itself for dinner. The favored treasure of green dragons is handcrafted items ranging from sculptures and artwork to ornate weapons and magical armor. The more work involved in the item's creation, the more value green dragons place on them.
All right, hello, operator. What do you think about this?
I love it so much. I was actually getting ready to, I was like, oh man, he's going to ask me what I think. I know what I'm going to say. I'm going to tell him about how they prefer to trick their people in or their prey into offering themselves.
That sounds familiar.
That sounds awful familiar. You're absolutely right. And they're terrible for a few reasons. One, you know, the poison and the way they affect the land around them. Two, how conniving they are. And three, their treasure hoard is not great. It's usually like handcrafted items and just loose gold that they're using for bribes. They measure their self-worth on the effects of their lives.
I love it.
There's nothing but terrible things when green dragons are involved.
You know, that reminds me of one time we were playing a, what was that? The second adventure, that, what?
Lord of the Dragon Queen?
Yeah. Anyway, where I was like bride, my Forge Domain cleric bride, of all things, white dragon, by, if you let us pass, I will create a statue of you out of gold.
That's great.
Go on.
I'm listening, mortal.
What? I'm looking at that comment. That's a shitty trap.
So, yeah, I love this adventure. It's very simple. It gives you a lot of things to deal with. And what I mentioned earlier, how I love the scheming and the political intrigue, this ties into it really, really well. And I think would be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, that'll do it for our encounter. Ian, would you like to tell us about our magic item of the podcast?
Staying on brand for today's theme, today our magic item is the Ring of Draconic Knowledge. Wondrous item, very rare. Requires attunement. This platinum ring is fashioned in the form of a Bahamut's wings spread and tail looping around to, well, create the form of a ring. When you wear it, you gain the following benefits. Your intelligence score increases by 2 to a maximum of 20. You can speed, read, and write in Draconic. You have advantage on charisma persuasion checks made to interact with dragons. You have advantage on intelligence checks to recall lore and other knowledge related to dragons. And here's the next one, and this one's a doozy. You get Disintegration Breath.
Ooh.
As an action, you can inhale a beam of platinum energy from your mouth to a target within 60 feet. The target can be a creature, object, or creation of magical force. Like, well, Wall of Force. The creature targeted with this feature must make a DC 15 dex saving throw, and if they fail, they take 10d6 plus 40 force damage. If this damage reduces the target to 0, they're disintegrated. And we can go into all the details of disintegration, but we don't have all day.
You can use this feature once. And recharges that dawn.
Yeah,
that too.
Can you imagine being a fairy wearing this as an armband
or a belt?
And you get this, you got this tiny little thing saying, "Bitch, you don't want to mess with me." I'm like, oh, bring it. What are you gonna do?
I love it. It's got a lot going for it. I will say, I like the fact that it raises your intelligence by 2, but not past the maximum of 20. So it's not taking, oh, it's not doing the job of another artifact better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I actually,
yeah, the disintegration.
Yeah, and I do miss items that give you a straight up plus to your current stat, not the path that for the tradition take. And like, this is not your number.
Oh yeah, like the intellect handband makes it like 19 or something.
Well, like the one example,
same with like belt of giant strength. Mm-hmm. Your strength is just a 19 now.
Well, the example thing is like, here, Paladin, here's a belt of giant strength, make it 21. Well, then why did I spend the last 8 levels of ASIs to make it 20?
Because, yeah, I hadn't thought about that. Because then you feel like you wasted those increases.
Right.
I hadn't considered that.
Does make Artificers real fun to play, though.
It sure does.
This little bastard, man, he plays one in our Plane Shifter campaign that we stream, which you can find every other week on Fridays.
And the crap I come up with.
Yes, very clever and a little flying bastard. And one of my things, he's broken just because he's like, oh, he can fly. What are you going to do? I'm going to fly away. Damn it. They're going to throw shit at you then.
The hardest part about playing a min-maxed artificer is surviving the first 3 levels with 8 strength and 8 dex.
Actually, I see this here. It was on the second page. While attuned to the ring, you have a 50% chance each day at dawn of growing platinum scales. Is that just for looking pretty, or does that have a
mechanical? No mechanical benefit. That's just a flavor I put in there. Yep. He didn't read it, but who needs the extra flavor that Justin went out of his time to out of his way to?
Yeah,
I appreciate you, Justin.
Thank you, operator.
No, don't
I
lie.
That. anyways, I think that'll do it for our magic item. Hello, operator. Did you want to take our Dungeon Master tip?
Yeah, absolutely. Talk about shining with dice today. Dice are the most obvious sign of success in Dungeons & Dragons, and most role-playing games for that matter. While there are certainly other ways to identify success, this is the most clear. As DMs, when a player character rolls high, it's our job to make the player's character shine, giving the players as many opportunities to shine and look cool while they do it. This encourages engagement and proactive playing by the players. This isn't just limited to high rolls, though. It's been my experience that low rolls tend to be met with sighs and loss of tension and excitement. Instead of using the low dice rolls to reflect a failure on the character's part, instead, turn it around so there's a moment where the defender shines in a glorious moment. Your tall, lanky blade master rushes towards the black dragonborn with a blade flurry of almost impossible to see strikes. Dragon-like figure manages to answer your flurry with a quick footwork and is able to avoid some of the blows. The few that do hit home have their impact weakened by its dance and are unable to penetrate its scaly hide. A toothy grin stares back at you.
Can I give you inspiration? Can we give him inspiration? That's inspiration. Somebody give him an Oscar.
Do you do voiceovers?
I don't. It's my goal after I finish this job, though.
You need to. You should open up a Fiverr account immediately.
I still laugh when we actually at that one convention in Lansing, when you had an ogre swing down on my Goliath Barbarian who was raging, and I used his racial features to negate all the damage.
He just stopped it.
I extend my hand and catch the hammer, and you're like, the ogre is very confused.
It reminds me of that scene in Justice League where Superman stops the axe and he just goes, not impressed. Anyway, so what are your thoughts on this this player tip here, hello operator?
For the Dungeon Master tip, 100%, absolutely, I love it. There are fewer things I find more immersion breaking than a player saying, hey, I rolled a 13. And the DM just replying, you missed.
I hate that.
Like, there should be a dance. There should be description. And honestly, if you're trying to fill a full session and you didn't prep a lot, like I don't, then adding more of that descriptor, stretching it out, talking about the glancing blow, or if it hits, how the blade sinks into the flesh and you see it pull apart and blood splatter. I love that so much. Painting a mental image with your words does so much to create an experience that your players will want to come back to.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. Although I'll admit, I usually always use the brief descriptions in a lot of games I run. But that's because, especially for like the game I run for my brother's group, we only have about an hour and a half, 2 hours, so we gotta move things along.
That is fair.
Well, and the thing I was going with this was also the fact that we always are so gung-ho to, oh, that's a high roll, here's the description. We forget that the low roll isn't a failure on the player character's fault, but it's the defenses or the whatever of the other person. One that comes to mind is when a fighter rolls really low on an attack roll against a wizard that has mage armor. There should be some sort of description of how the magic is absorbing the blast and you know, sending out a shockwave of ringing noise or something. Not that you just missed, you know, and, you know, you stumbled over it. There should be something there that the other character did to cause that miss, I guess. So
yes, and you can, I'll add to that, you can make your, if you're trying to make this fight a little bit more tense, you can add so much to it with that. Your barbarian rolls a nat one as he brings down his gargantuan battle axe, and it, instead of just saying, oh, you missed and hit yourself in the toe, say the big bad just reached up and caught the blade one-handed.
Oh, yes. That is so much more impactful.
But mechanically, the exact same thing happened. You missed. Mm-hmm. But the descriptor changes the entire encounter.
And how the scene looks, and that's important. So
he felt the deck of the enemy. He caught it with his teeth.
Dungeon Master, my blade was poisoned. Does he choke? I mean, he caught it with his fingers. All right, I think that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip, shining with dice. Moving on to our player tip of the podcast,
don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by listening to Brandon talk about conjuring tricksters.
Damn, Skippy. The rogue is certainly one of the highest and most consistent damage dealers. Why do I have a Midwestern bullshit?
I don't know.
Well, you just damage dealer there with it, honey.
And most mobile in the game. But we can greatly increase their versatility and strength, eh? With just 2 levels into wizard.
Don't you know?
The arcane trickster subclass allows you to delve into the wizard's spell list, but with very few options, most of which have restrictions. Now, the 2 levels into wizard allow us to broaden our tools for offense and defense. Oh, isn't that spectacular? First, we gain some extra spell slots and access to ritual casting, which means now we can use Find Familiar as a ritual without expending the precious spell slot. Ooh, it's so interesting.
Oh, worse. You gain access to cantrips. Booming Blade or Green Flame Blade stack with Backstab.
Oh, yeah, they do.
We'll get there. Secondly, we can now pick up spells such as Absorb Elements, Shield, and most importantly, Mage Armor, which can significantly boost our AC with a 13 plus Dexterity modifier. Yeah. Putting it higher than Studded Leather, which is the highest AC for Mundane Light Armor. Lastly, we pick at our 2nd level in Wizard, we pick School of Conjuration.
Yes.
This grants our Conjuration Trickster the Minor Conjuration. This allows our Trickster to create any non-magical object we can think of that isn't larger than 3 feet or 10 pounds. This means infinite thieves' tools, keys to doors we can see, and even a weapon if we need one. My personal favorite, Conjure a Healer's Kit. It's hacks.
Whatever, dude.
Or arcane focus. Kel traps? Hell, ammo. With this, our rogue becomes a lean, mean conjuring machine. Need a fork? Got it. Need a rest? Create a stool. Nature calls? Leave a stool. Want to entertain your friend? Poof. An instrument. Whatever it is, you always have it on hand. Okie dokie.
Oh my god.
I say about Ludafisk.
What do you think, operator?
That hurt. I mean, I played a Swarmkeeper Ranger for a stream not long ago named Harvey Honeymaker. I don't actually keep the honey and all the bees do that.
Everyone on the West Sides are
little beekeeper humor there. God, I hated
just
playing
behave,
so
okay?
much. And you just channeled everything of that. I'll totally say I don't know that I go conjuration for the mage armor with a rogue, because a rogue's favorite armor is hide. I love it. I honestly love it. I really do.
Oh my god, this is funny. Conjuration is so overlooked, but my the heart. Fact that it allows you get access to things like you can pick up with Arcane Trickster and this, you can pick up the Booming Blade, which you mentioned, does work with the sneak attack and stuff. But the Absorb Elements boost your attack, damn it, and your defense.
Yep.
That's amazing. Shield, obviously, pure AC bonus, which is great. The one thing that I really think is interesting is, as a thief, being able to conjure any tool that you want and need at any moment, the hilarity ensues. For instance, even just the typical tavern scene can change completely with somebody who's obsessed with conjuring everything. Like, oh, germaphobe? Oh, I ain't eating off your silverware. I got my own because I'm not getting any diseases, you know? I don't know. It's just, it seems like it would create so much roleplay opportunity. And the fact that you can use conjure things like healer's kits, poisoner's kits, these things become significantly easier to obtain with conjuration than... without. So you guys got anything
I will say I once played a character in a Westmarch style campaign where we were given like 200 gold, and the only caveat was we couldn't buy any magical items. They had we could only buy uncommon items.
Mm-hmm.
Well, 200 gold goes a long way when a turnip cost a copper. So I ended up buying a wagon and a mule and one of every single mundane item in the game and just putting in this wagon. And I love the fact that this character could just pull it out of his hat instead.
I love it. My cabbages. Avatar reference for those not in the know. So this is something that is just a lot of fun. As a rogue, being able to just conjure a key to anything you see makes getting past most normal situations very simple, which will frustrate some DMs to no end, and then eventually you're going to have arcane locks on everything.
Create a disguise kit.
Create a disguise kit. Yes, everything you need.
Yeah.
You got to come up to a locked door. It's like, I got this, guys. There's a reason why that was locked.
Not anymore. Yes, I think it's really fun. I love the idea of the guy with the cart. Like, that's hilarious. I totally would be picking up proficiency in a sling and just start slinging some of that shit at people. And you have it's pretty much infinite ammo. Oh, which, by the way, you can also create with conjuration. You're welcome.
I was about to say, and the stuff vanishes too, right?
Yep, once it hits something, so there's no evidence of the deed.
Dun, 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 dun.
Perfect assassin. You're welcome. Who needs real assassin for that little extra damage when you can conjure poison? Poison? Oh, yeah, poison's not... I just bought this crawler poison. Guess what? It's not magical. Poof, now I've got more. Indefinitely.
Okay, there's got to be limits to that.
All right, it just says mundane items, and...
Potions. Poison is not a mundane item.
Non-magical, sorry.
If it hurts me, it's not mundane.
I think that'll do it for our player tip of the podcast. Don't be a dick. And you can avoid dickitude by conjuring a tree. Actually, you would be quite the dick.
That's a big dick.
Oh, man. What a great episode. As with always, we like to give away fat loots to our audience when they subscribe and follow us and all that stuff. This week we've got a special gift giveaway, the Bard College of Percussion, from Chad Lynch, who is a good friend of mine. He put together something that I feel was missing in most D&D games, which is loud, obnoxious drums. So he put together a wonderful pack that includes a variety of different percussion style instruments for your D&D game. The Bard College of Percussion is a Bard resource book that includes 2 new Bard colleges, 3 unique backgrounds, 17 percussion instruments, a unique faction, and the seeker of the Kurtol A-Lair adventure. Kurtol Mock.
Does that include cowbell?
Maybe.
It's got to have more cowbell.
It needs more cowbell.
Yeah, you need more cowbell. It comes with a collection of different subclasses, new instruments you can use, and a variety of backstories for you to toss into your D&D game. Who is our winner today, Brandon?
Our winner today is SD Webster 90.
If you didn't win, have no fear. Crit Academy's here. Head on over to CritAcademy.com and subscribe to our newsletter to be entered for a chance to win. Also, if you subscribe right now, you'll get one of our best-selling products, Challenge Accepted, for free. 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 I like you guys that much. Do it. Do it now. All right.
I have a sickness, and the cure is more cowbell.
Now, I'm also supposed to say that we have an extra bonus giveaway.
Oh, yeah.
We have extra copies, thanks to Chad, that we can give away today. So everyone who comments on the live stream through Saturday, that's next week, I guess, will be entered to win a copy. We will be choosing one lucky winner from anyone that's commented on Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook. My wife's going to have to deal with tracking all that down. But yes, we'll be picking winners from all of you. So if you've joined us today, I don't know, it was through? Yeah. Join us today. Thank you very much. It means a lot to us.
Come back next week.
Now, before we close out, I want to take a moment to say thank you, Hello Operator, for joining us. Hopefully you had a little bit of fun today.
I've had a blast. Thank you so much. Really quick to Brandon, I really appreciate your Deckard Cain announcements earlier.
Thank you.
Yes, I loved it. Thank you guys so much for having me. This has been an absolute blast. I'm so grateful that TikTok has brought us together. I love your content. Please go follow his stuff. And if you want to hear weird voices and a lot about dragons, check out mine. Hello Operator. The O in Operator is zero because I'm weird like that. I have links to all my Twitch channels and stuff there. And yeah.
I love the character on one of your streams. You did, and I can't remember his name. He's all like an old style mechanic.
Get Bizlock, Goblin Extraordinaire.
Yes, that voice is worth listening to over and over and over again. I love it. I love watching you go through it.
That's the character I'm playing on twitch.tv/creativecrits.
Mm-hmm.
We play every other Sunday. And I just unveiled that he is an armorer artificer. I've never played one of those, so he's getting ready to go full Iron Gob.
Instead of Iron Man, I see what you did there. All right. If you enjoyed the show and you would like to support us, please visit us at CurtAcademy.com. Follow us on social media. Please leave us a review on iTunes, even if you don't use iTunes, because iTunes is literally connected to every other pod platform. So do that. If you're not subscribed on YouTube, please do that. We're closing in on the 7,000 mark. I think we're like 25 away. So that's exciting. With that, I am your host, Justin.
And I'm your guest, Hello Operator.
I'm your co-host, Ian.
And I'm your co-host, Brandon. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blade sharp and spells prepared, heroes.